Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's race week, and we finally can get to a race preview. Suzuka, one of Tim Horaney's favorite tracks. Tim, well, let's talk about this thing. I mean, listen, this is one of the tracks that I think you look forward to the most on the calendar. You got to tell us why.
Oh, man, I absolutely, like, love it. Like, I think I said in the last episode, like, this is where a Formula One car, Adam, like, comes to life, right? This is what an F1 car is made for, especially that Sector 1 at Suzuka. And if you've ever played the F1 video games, like I've just recently started to, then you'll get an understanding as to why, like, I love it so much. So much downforce required on the car, just the speeds, the commitment from the drivers, any small mistake and you pay for it. Unlike other tracks where you make a mistake and you have a nice cushy little runoff, you make a mistake here and yeah, could end in not disaster, but it could end your day really. And so I think like one of the reasons I really love this track is that, but also the commitment from the driver is it's paramount. I mean, the fine details, the fine margins, positioning of the car is extremely important. And just to try and get the car into the right balance so you can do what you want to with it. That for me is just so exciting because you actually see just the skill of the driver, but also the performance of the race car. It's two things coming together. It's incredible.
So what kind of track is it? Like, what kind of car is going to lend itself well to a track like this?
I mean, I think the Red Bulls are going to be, they're going to blow everyone's doors off.
They have an upgrade coming this weekend
too? They have a big upgrade coming this weekend too. So, I mean, and we'll see if that upgrade works, right, Adam? Like, we don't know. I mean, it may not work, but the chances of it working are probably fairly high. We're talking of maybe like a 5% chance this thing doesn't really work out. But that being said, I think Red Bull, obviously, that's the car that if you're looking for a comparison, that's going to be it. They're mm-hmm. going to be incredible here. I think they're just going to absolutely smash everyone. I don't know how far up they could lap within the race, but I'm assuming it's probably going to be pretty far. But
so you think Ferrari does not match up well with them here?
I don't think Ferrari's going to be able to keep pace. I think they'll be the second fastest team, however, and I think McLaren is going to be biting at Ferrari's heels in this weekend. But I don't see anyone else coming up and challenging Red Bull. And I think it's going to be Red Bull and then Ferrari, McLaren. And then I think you're going to have that Aston Martin Mercedes battle just a bit further behind.
Okay. Now, if you're looking for particular driving styles that work really well at this track, you know, so getting the most out of your car, maybe Red Bull's got the fastest car, no surprise. And maybe we get thrown a wild card. Maybe there's like a huge, it holds them up and they're terrible. What a story that would be. Not likely. But who's the, if all the cars were equal, who's the driver that's going to benefit most, or who are the drivers that are going to benefit most from a track like this?
You know, that's a great question. It really, I think, comes down to smoothness of a driver, like how smooth they are with a car, and then aggression level as well. How aggressive and how much do you like to attack, and how aggressive do you like to be with corners? And I guess brave, you know, that would be the word I would use. And, you know, obviously I think Verstappen has a mix of all of those things. And that's, again, you know, one of the reasons why at this moment he's set so far away from everyone else. And then I think also like a driver like Fernando Alonso, a driver like Lance Stroll, a driver like, you know, like Lewis Hamilton. Science would be interesting to see here. Cause like I, You know, this is a track like Charles Leclerc would be very well suited for. I'm not sure about Carlos Sainz, because I know he likes a lot of, you know, he likes a bit of understeer in the car. And I don't think this is the type of track when you get into sector one, if you have understeer in the car, it's, you know, you're obviously going to be slow. It may be a little more, it may give you a little more confidence, but it's going to slow you down. Where if you're a driver like Max, you like it on the nose. You like to be able to really turn the car in and hustle it through a corner. It's definitely going to be something that would suit that type of driving style, I would say.
Okay.
I wish like 130R, like, just going to get this out of here. Like, I wish 130R was more of a challenge. Like, it's not, I mean, I remember back in like the, you know, Mika Hakkinen, David Coulthard. I mean, even before them, like 130R was like that was a challenge of a corner. It really was. And I think that just speaks levels to the amount of downforce these cars have on them now and where they generate that downforce from, that it doesn't feel like a big commitment corner anymore. That's something that, you know, I really, you know, I remember as a kid, like watching that, or, you know, like watching Alonso, you know, passing Michael Schumacher, like going into that corner was one of those things where you stood up and you were just like, oh my God. Like,
yeah,
I don't think you don't ever really see that anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that I think it was David Croft has said a couple of times and said in an interview this week that switching from the V6s to the hybrid engines, which means the cars are slower and now a lot bigger, too.
Heavier.
Does it mean that corners like that just can't exist anymore because they're not as nimble?
Like, I think with 130R, like a long, long time ago, that used to be a corner where, you know, is it flat? Like, are you flat out through that? Like, and that's where the driver would have to question whether or not the car would be able to handle a corner like that. Like, you as a driver have to make a decision of like, am I lifting a little bit before the turn in? Because I don't know if the car is going to be able to like handle this, and we're going to end up in the wall and then maybe the field somewhere. Like, you have to, as a driver, you know, have that confidence to be like, okay, no, I'm going to try and do this flat out. You know, sometimes you have drivers taking their left foot off of the, you know, the clutch or the brake back in the day and taking that left foot and holding the right foot down just so you could like fully commit to it, because your natural instinct would be to start lifting the throttle off. That's just a natural instinct because you're scared, right? You just don't know if you're going to survive this. And so, you know, those types of, you know, there are a couple of those corners, I think, on the calendar, maybe not to that severity, but I would say like 130R is not one of those anymore. It's kind of like, this is flat out. We're going from the straightaway straight through this little kink here and down into this final section of racetrack. And it's like, I wish like we still had that type of a corner there, because it's just not like that anymore, because these cars have so much downforce on them. It's not an issue anymore, right? They don't have to have that sensation. You don't get that feeling of like, oh, I don't know if the car is going to be able to do this. Now it's like, yeah, this car is going to be able to do this, we're good. Like,
now going into this weekend, what's been interesting is we're finally getting some, you know, long-term feedback from the Australian Grand Prix, right? Like, guys come in, they do their media day on Wednesday, and that's why we like to do the show on Thursday, because you get a lot of the response of, hey, now that you've had a few days or a few weeks to think about it, what did you think about this in the last race? And one of the names that came up today, and he's trending because of it, is Fernando Alonso. Obviously, he was penalized for a brake check on George Russell that has been debated. And George had a pretty nasty crash. But Fernando was far enough ahead of them where, you know, even I look at that as a layman and kind of go, boy, that seems like a bit of a stretch to me. You know, what did he have to say about it, Tim, this morning when he was talking about it?
I said, like, first off, to clarify, I mean, like, so the FIA penalized him for potentially dangerous driving, erratic driving. And, you know, we talked about this on the show following the Australian Grand Prix. And I even said, like, that's not a brake check. Like, what Fernando did there is not a brake check. Like, I know what a brake check is, and that's definitely not a brake check. Trust me.
Yeah.
And I think, like, for Fernando, like, I think he felt that, one, there's probably never going to be another driver who gets a penalty that's like that. And two, I think, in my opinion, it's a little, it was harsh, right? Like, it, I don't agree with having a 20-second penalty for that. And I think there are quite a few drivers who agree with that statement as well. Like, there were a number of F1 drivers who came out today and said, like, she shouldn't have gotten a penalty for that. But there are some who feel that, I mean, he should have. And so there is a bit of a gray area there. But I think, like, one of the things, you know, Fernando in that instance is trying to do is he's trying to set himself up so he doesn't get passed going into the next corner off of that straightaway where George may have been able to get him. It's kind of hard to say whether or not George would have been able to get him. But when I look at it, and, you know, I've watched the replay of it a couple times, especially from George's perspective, like there's quite a bit of room there, right? Like he's, for George, you have to take into consideration, like there's dirty air for sure. You have a car that's like slowing up just a bit in front of you. But then you got to take a look at from the standpoint, there's a lot of lift and coast right now. So when a driver is coming into a braking area during a racing, you know, they're having to lift before they start to brake. So lift off the gas before you get over to the brake pedal, because you're trying to save some fuel. Mm-hmm. And some people may think that, like, oh, well, that's not, you know, you're not really saving much, but over a Grand Prix distance, lifting and coasting into a corner, you're actually saving quite a bit of fuel. It could end up potentially being two extra laps of fuel that's going to allow you to attack somebody or allow you to just finish the race. And so you got to take that in consideration, because, like, that's something similar to what Fernando was actually doing. He did actually lift. He brushed the brake a tiny bit.
Yeah.
And then back to the gas just a bit, but then lifted a tiny bit again and then back into it. And so for George, you know, I think he closed up a couple hundred meters off of that. And I think, you know, obviously catching the dirty air and then going into the wall. I think the question is, would Fernando have gotten a penalty if George hadn't have crashed?
Right.
And so I don't know. What do you think, Adam? Like, when do you think that he should have gotten a penalty?
As I said, as a layman, I don't see how what Fernando did affected George. Like, I think, and you know, listen, I know Fernando and George get along really well. Like, they get along like a house on fire, those two guys. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of alternate reality where Fernando ends up at Mercedes with George. I know he wants to stay with Aston Martin and he's happy with things and that sort of thing, but I think they seem to have a very good mutual respect for each other. I don't know, Tim, I think sometimes, and this is human nature, I see this in other sports as well, you're penalizing based on the result rather than the action. And I think that they can't reverse this call because the FIA president was already under investigation for reversing another Fernando Alonso call last year, I believe. And so to me, this was a prime example of, we made the call, it's a wrong call, but politically, because we're already we're under investigation for quote unquote being too lenient with this driver, we can't now come back and say, oh yeah, this is, maybe it's a 10 second or maybe it's not a penalty at all. It doesn't, if that is going to be a penalty in Formula One, there's going to be a lot of penalties.
Yeah.
Right. That's what it is. So yeah. I'm struggling with it too. That's why I want to ask you about it, because as a layman, I don't understand it.
Yeah. So, like, if we go back to, like, it's not the first time that a driver has done something like this to defend from a position or hang on to a position. I mean, drivers do it all the time to get the DRS, right? If they have another driver who's close behind, like, they'll play games to try and get the DRS so they don't get, you know, smoked on the next activation zone. And I mean, drivers do that. And so now you've got this gray area. And I mean, credit to Alonso, right? Like, he's great at playing in those gray areas, the dark arts, as some of the people like to say Fernando's good at. And I mean, man, like, he he's right in there, right? He's in that zone for that. But I just don't know. It's like you're opening a can of worms when you do something like this. I can, from George's perspective, like, it, you know, having the crash, I mean, I think, you know, Lando Norris said like maybe a little more heads up driving. I'm paraphrasing here, but a little more heads up driving from George. And, you know, does that crash happen? Like, is he able to save it, keep it on the road? You're probably going to lose some time. And that's probably what Fernando would have wanted, not a crash. So I think when you look at this from, I guess, the steward's perspective, or even the team's perspective, that if this comes down to position, and if you lose a position, if you don't gain a position because of a driver lifting and coasting, going into a braking zone, maybe slightly brushing the brake a bit, slowing up just a bit, is that a penalty now? Like you've just opened up like a bit of a, like I said, can of worms. So it's like teams can lobby now for these sorts of things, right? They're going to have evidence. They're going to bring the evidence down to the stewards. You'll be like, look, he did this, this, and this. It's exactly what this driver did here. You gave this driver a 20-second time penalty.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't like it. I'll put it that way. I don't like it. sometimes it takes talking to somebody like yourself who is a driver to understand if you're right or not. You know what I mean? Because as a fan, you watch one way. As a driver, you'd watch another. Now, Tim, one of the things that has also emerged in really only the last 48 hours is after around 18 months out of the sport, Sebastian Vettel has done a bunch of press appearances, and it's looking like he wants to come back. It looks like he's made the decision. Now the PR campaign is underway. I wanted to ask you about this because once the Ferrari thing was done, he was with Aston Martin and didn't do very well, but the car wasn't very good. And now is kind of campaigning to come back. How likely do you think it is that Sebastian Vettel gets a seat next year?
I just, I'm going to like go back for a second. I don't agree with when people have said in the past that, you know, Seb wasn't good when he was at Aston Martin.
Like,
I have an issue with that because...
Okay. Was he good?
He was. Like, you can't sit here and tell me that he wasn't giving it everything that he actually had.
It just wasn't a great car, right?
The car wasn't that great. I mean, you have to remember the iteration of a car that they actually went through the last time that Seb was in the car. Like, it went from being one thing to a totally different thing halfway through the season. And so... I take issue with that for sure. Like, Seb was driving extremely well when he was with Aston Martin. Now, car wasn't very good. Was he starting to get burnt out from the travel? Was he starting to want to spend more time with his family? Yeah, those things are accurate. They add up. But in the performance side, no. When that guy was in the car, he was delivering the goods and everything gave it everything he had. Now he's out doing the PR campaign right now because I believe he's got an energy drink that he's trying to promote out there. Right. Mm-hmm. He has been doing testing with Porsche and their hypercar. I have a feeling he's probably going to try and take on the 24 hours of Le Mans. And that would be incredible if he can add that to his resume and maybe even potentially get a win, because Porsche is pretty awesome when it comes to Le Mans, so that would be cool to see. But Seb getting back into F1, I don't know, Adam, if I see it. I really...
You don't know if you see it. That's interesting. I mean, he's got an enormous support system in terms of like fans. Fans love
for
him.
Sure.
You can
for
tell sure. that sponsors would be back on board with it, so there's that. Why do you think that there might be hesitation from the teams to take a guy like that on?
I think it comes down to like who's out there right now who is actively in Formula One, who is actively driving to a point, right? So Seb hasn't been driving an F1 car in a few years, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, you have that. The sport tends to move on quite quickly. And
very
so
quickly.
If you're going to take, and especially with this regulation, it is very difficult to get to grips for these drivers. You have to understand that like Seb would have to come back in, relearn some stuff. It may take some time to get him up to speed as a racing team, and seeing how competitive the field is and seeing how much these cars change throughout the season. Like, do you think that is a risk worth taking. Now, granted, he is a four-time Formula One world champion. He's an extremely talented driver, still is. If you were to sit there and say, do I want to take Carlos Sainz or do I want to have Sebastian Vettel?
You're going to take Carlos.
100%.
Now, but Tim, you know, and part of it he said too in the interviews was that, you know, it has to be a competitive car. Like he wants to be, and of course he does. Of course he wants a competitive car. Like, are you going to be like, oh man, I don't want to play for the competitive team. Yeah, I'd rather be at the back, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Put me in that Alpine. Let's go.
Yeah, right.
But
no, he is talking to Toto Wolff. Like that is true. He is having conversations with Toto. They range from a number of different topics. It not necessarily is in the realm of him coming back and driving for the team. It is other things. So that has to be stated. Now, again, when you look at that seat at Mercedes, I don't think Toto wants to put a rookie in there. Mm-hmm. I think he wants to put someone who has experience in there, current experience. And I still feel that driver's Carlos Sainz. That's all there's to it, man. Like, I really, and Seb's saying, like, if he's going to come back, he wants to be in a competitive ride. But, like, outside of that top five that we have, I mean, those drivers aren't really going anywhere except for maybe swapping teams. Like,
right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Stroll's locked. Alonso seemingly is locked. Red Bull, it's strangely enough, seems to have the most flux in their driver lineup. I don't see Vettel going back there.
Again, right? Like, why would you want to go back and be a number two or, you know
Max,
what I mean? Like, it's
yeah.
to Max and...
And then Mercedes makes sense. There's also the German connection with Audi. But does Seb want to go to the back of the field? Because really, the Sauber team right now can talk about being competitive in a few years all they want. The reality is they're a few years away. Mm-hmm. Seb's 35, 36, my age. Old. So old. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, was he 37, I think he is, or something.
Is
like
that what he is? Okay, yeah.
I think he's around that.
So, like, does that fit his time frame too, right? Like, you know, are they going to be... One thing I did wonder about, though, is Williams. And the reason I wondered about Williams is if they're able to hold Albon and Logan Sargeant, again, sophomore driver, you need, like you said it in the last episode, you need 3 years, like you do, to get in. But if Logan Sargeant, if they decide by the end of the season they're not thrilled with him or they want to move on from him, does Sebastian Vettel make sense in that context? Because you can sell him a little bit on the team getting better, the resurgence, it's a classic brand. They've got money behind them. They have a lot of, like, listen, they don't have, they're not going to have a third chassis till Miami. That's not great. Not a great selling point, but they have seen significant steps forward in the last few years.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
This episode is brought to you by ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. Enter ServiceNow. It puts AI to work for people, for employees, for developers, and even your customers, removing frustration and supercharging productivity. On our intelligent platform, AI isn't just a promise. It's happening today. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. To learn more, visit servicenow.com/AI for people.
They have. That's definitely true. I think if you're, I mean, one of the things that Seb has said is, you know, what does his family think? Like, are they cool with him going back out on the road for, 9 months of the year and not really being at home with the family and stuff? That is something that he does need to run by his family. That's important to him. And I think, like, part of that conversation, I think probably has to be like, hey, if I'm going to give up, you know, whatever, 9, 10 months, like, it has to be in a competitive ride where I'm legitimately fighting for podiums, race wins, maybe a championship. And it's like when you look at Williams, and no offense to Williams, right? Like that's not going to happen in the near future.
No, that's three to 5 years max.
Exactly. It's going to be a while. And so I think you made a great point with like Sauber and Audi. But again, it's like you had said, like that's another, it's a longer term project, right? It's not, you're not going to yield big time results from that in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. Sorry, but you're not, right? Like maybe 2026 if they hit the engine regs out of the park, but then you've got the car regs as well, and those two things need to align. I mean, that's
difficult to do.
Yeah, that's, you're rolling the dice with that. So I don't know, Adam, would you like to see him back in Formula One?
I think for the fans it would be great. Sebastian Vettel, for me, I want to see more young stars emerge, if I'm being honest. Like, yeah. I love the love-in that he and Lewis Hamilton have.
Yeah.
I want to see the Yuki Tsunodas and the Carlos Sainzes, and I know Carlos is established, but I want to see those guys' stars rise. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If there was an 11th team, like if Andretti Cadillac had been allowed in, and it seems like they will be eventually. I feel like that's going to happen. because the FIA is not going to allow this. Liberty Media is not going to allow them not to have an American team, a real American team in there soon. That's got to happen. It has
to happen. I hope so. I hope
it has. It has to, in my mind. Like, it's just this is business. You're America's the biggest market. Go after it. You need two teams for America. Haas is sort of they're a budget team, right? They do spend, but they're a budget team. You need a big, bad American brand in there. So if there was the 11th team on there, I'd be like, yeah, Sebastian Vettel would be perfect for something like that, because there would be a diffusion of talent. And whether or not he would race for, say, Cadillac, there would be teams looking for an experienced driver, world championship quality. That's an absolute yes all day, every day. I just feel like I am not as into the Sebastian Vettel storyline as I think a lot of people are. And I think a lot of that comes from a little bit of nationalism, the good kind, not the bad kind, mm-hmm. Where the German people are very proud of their drivers. Mm-hmm. You look at the support, Ralf Schumacher still making appearances regularly on, German sports outlets, and talking a lot of nonsense. Like, he doesn't say sometimes much of value. Like, every time I see a Ralf Schumacher quote, I'm like, what? Like, that, if his quotes were a race car, he would be finishing 11th or 12th like he did in his career. Like, they're just boring. I'm like, so bored with him on that. And I don't mean to be insulting, but it's like, what are you talking about? Like, are you talking to anybody on the grid at all? Or are you just, you're in your living room yelling at your TV? And so, like, you see the Mick Schumacher stuff. Mm. Everybody's so behind Mick. He's so great. Mm-hmm. And he was okay. I don't think Mick Schumacher is a Formula One driver. And his name is in there because he's a Schumacher. And fine, that's the way it is. I think that whenever you have, and you see this with British drivers too, you see this with some Spanish drivers, but I find the Brits and the Germans very much like, well, they're British or they're German, so they're great. It's like, well, not necessarily. No, and it's not that Sebastian's not great. He's a freaking four-time world champion. I just feel like, I don't know. I think the world's moved on, and I would be, I wish him nothing but the best, because he seems like an awesome guy, like really seems like the best. If he comes back and it's a great comeback story, that's awesome. I don't know. I love the young star talent in this sport, the Leclercs, the Norrises, the Piastris, the Tsunodas. And I'm putting Yuki Tsunoda in there because he's been spectacular for the first three races. Like, you look at the young star quality that you're going to have over the next 3 to 5 years. This is crazy. So taking up a space that takes away from one of those drives, like, imagine Vettel's back, but Liam Lawson doesn't get a seat. Yeah, that would be wrong. That'd be wrong. Yeah. Right. So anyway, that's how I feel about it, Tim.
It's good. I mean, I think, when younger drivers need to get a shot.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, like, if you've worked your ass off to get there, if you've put the effort in and you've gotten the results and you have everything it takes to qualify you to be an F1 driver. And when you get on the grid, or you get your chance to be on the grid, and you've put in a performance,
mm-hmm.
you should have a seat somewhere, like Ollie Berman. Like, I would hate to see him not be on the grid next year. Like, what are we doing here? If that, if
Kimi Antonelli in the next couple years, right?
Yeah, and if he shows like great promise, then he needs to be on the grid as well. And that's the way Formula One, that's the way racing is, right? I mean, and this is a top, this is a just a topic for another time. Obviously, we get into all of this stuff, but like, that's where we need another team on the grid, right? Like,
we should have two more. I think we should have two more teams.
We need more seats. Like, it just, it's a conversation, obviously, snowballs, but
yep.
At the end of the day, like, we do need the younger generation to get a chance, and they have to have a chance because they've worked so hard to get there. I mean, like, Seb went on to win 4 world championships, man. 4 of them. He's in the record books. He's one of the most, you know, winningest drivers in the championships ever. Like, he's up there, man. So it's like, I don't want to say this driver has sort of had their time or whatever, but I think the younger talent needs to get a chance as well.
Yeah.
Right. And now we're in that zone, Adam, where like, this is where the young, we have a lot of really great young talent and it needs to get shown.
And it needs to be marketed. It does.
100%.
It does.
And like, look, and if Seb can get a ride to race at a top team in the hypercar division in the 24 hours of Le Mans and WEC, and like, that is an, like, again, you're adding like another thing to your resume, right? Like, that's a huge accomplishment to have on there as a racing driver. And he's getting that opportunity, which would be enormous. And if he goes on to win, let's say if he signs up, he's going to do the 24 hours of Le Mans, he wins, that's a crown jewel event.
Yep. I'd be much more interested in that. I'm with you on that,
I would
Tim.
Love, that would be awesome. I would tune in. Like, I watch some 24 hours of Le Mans, but I would tune in to watch that, man.
So Tim, very quickly in the last 5 minutes, I want to talk a couple of things here. Chassis, number one, and then two, your predictions. Number one, chassis. First one, Logan Sargeant is going to be racing the repaired chassis that Alex Albon wrecked in Australia. And so Logan Sargeant's not going to get his car back. He's going to get the repaired car. Is that, what does that mean?
Oh, it could mean so many different things, and we won't know until, you know, Logan actually gets to go out and jump in the car. But essentially, Adam, like we had discussed, you know, Williams sent that broken chassis back to Williams headquarters. It arrived like a couple Mondays ago, like 2 a.m. following the Australian Grand Prix, and they patched it up, put it back together. Now, essentially, that is Alex Albon's car. And Alex swapped everything over to use Logan's car.
Mm-hmm.
And now Alex is keeping Logan's car, and Logan's getting Alex's damaged chassis that's supposedly had been really well prepared, and it's put back together. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why they didn't swap the cars back is because of how much work it would have taken the team to swap everything back around.
Okay.
Now, there's so many things that go into that, Adam. Like, I mean, let's say that tub, the chassis, it maybe has a tiny bit of flex in it. And maybe Logan's not going to feel that. But and it just puts the car in a tiny bit of a different window, and he starts to struggle a tiny bit. And then we get to this point where we're like, well, we don't have any chassis to swap over to something new. So here we are. And it's like, how is this going to affect Logan? Because we have to remember, this is a driver in his second year in Formula One. That's a tough spot to be in.
Mm-hmm.
For a young driver.
Yeah. Well, and what can a repaired chassis, how can that be different from the original? Like, can you tell me, like, can it perform differently? Is it
safety-wise? Safety-wise, it should be fine. Like, mm-hmm. in that respect, it's more along the performance side. Like, there had been, I'd mentioned this a few podcasts ago, like, there, you know, some drivers who I do know that have had to swap out a chassis because they're not getting the same feeling as another driver is getting, and they're struggling with performance. And that swap of chassis sometimes lifts the performance of the driver because maybe there was something wrong with it. Like, there had been cases where a chassis may have been flexing a tiny bit, and that loses performance within a corner, under load, et cetera, et cetera. So my thing is that, you know, William seems pretty confident that this thing's going to be good. There's not going to be any issues with it. My thing is that, well, what happens if, like, Logan starts having some issues with it and he's struggling and kind of telling them, like, hey, like, you know, give me back my car, right?
Yeah, yeah. Give me back my effing car. Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I mean, it's a huge vote of confidence for Albon, obviously, by the team. And you got to imagine that's going to light a fire under Logan Sargeant's butt, too, just to say, listen, you know, you got to get behind me the same way you get behind him.
If you're Logan Sargeant, how are you going to handle that?
Well, I'm not going to be thrilled. I'm going to be pissed. I would race my balls off, if I'm going to be honest. Like, I would just go crazy. And I think that I would want to prove that I'm worth the same backing you give Albon, right? I'd be mad at the team, but I'd be mad in a competitive way, not mad in a destructive way. No. And really, what is James Vowell supposed to do, right? He's got one driver that performed last year and one driver that was learning the ropes and really didn't. So, you know, you got to throw your best behind your best driver. As soon as Logan decides to or can become the best driver or at least on par with Albon, then I think it'll be a different story. And also, this is all probably moot in Miami. That Miami's not for a bit, right? There's a few more races before that. But once Miami rolls around and there's a third chassis, I bet they swap the new chassis in for Logan's repaired one and you know, he gets his car back.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, could possibly do that. Yep,
100%. It all comes back to two. James has got to – you cannot ever go into a season. And apparently, they're not the only ones on the paddock with only two. I think Sauber might be one of them, and that's not good. You need to – Haas might be another. There are teams there that do not have three. Guys, it's Formula One. There is no excuse for that. No excuse. And this is what kills me, Tim. And I don't want to digress too much because I know we got limited time here, but they won't let Andretti Cadillac in, but they have teams on the grid. Like, they're worried about Andretti Cadillac's performance, but they had teams on the grid that can't show up with three cars. Like, what are we talking about here, guys?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
I don't know how you go racing and not have a backup.
I don't either.
Don't. Like, professional car racing and not have a backup. Now, I don't know what's causing that. I mean, is it the amount of development time that you're spending bringing new parts to the car and that getting in the way of developing a brand new chassis? And as for the teams, like, we don't know who those teams are. I mean, I saw the tweet that, you know, was put out, but it doesn't reference teams, right? It doesn't say, like, XYZ says this, right? So we can only assume. I don't know how you do it, man. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't either. That. I don't either. It'll be that. Something to watch. And lastly, on the chassis issue, Daniel Ricciardo said to the race that, you know, one of the things that they've raised or he's raised with Racing Bulls is that maybe they give him a new chassis before they decide that he's, in his words, shit. He's like, okay, don't just tell me I'm shit. Let's try that first and then we'll find out. And you know what? I mean, I think it's so funny that we're talking about one team that can't produce a new chassis in time and another that could replace one and build another one for Daniel Ricciardo. It does. The gap between him and Yuki does seem really freaking odd, though. It really does. Yes. Like, it's and I just have such a hard time believing that it's that Daniel's done. I just don't. And the reason is that when he raced in the Red Bull car last year, he was phenomenal.
Yep.
In testing.
I think, like, Adam, it's all about what the driver gets the feel of, right? And it's kind of similar with what we were talking about with Logan and, hey, what happens if he starts, you know, struggling? I mean, replacing a chassis, replacing a tub for a driver is not an easy thing for a team to do. But if the driver's telling them, like, look, I'm not doing a bad job here. I know I'm doing a good job here. There is something wrong with the car.
Mm-hmm.
If the driver is persistent in saying that, the team has to switch out the tub. You can't just, like, disregard a driver's feelings, what they're saying. I mean, they're the ones, their asses are in the seat, man.
Mm-hmm.
Not the engineers, not the mechanics, not the team principal, not the owners. It's the driver's ass in the seat. They're the ones that can feel more than anything else. So if Daniel is saying and asking for that, I'm pretty sure the team will accommodate and swap out a chassis if they see fit to do so. And if that's something that Ricardo really wants to do, then they will go ahead and do that. Because at the end of the day, it benefits everybody. If it works, it benefits Daniel, it benefits the team, it benefits you getting points, it benefits you getting up the constructors. There's just so many good things that come with it. So just do it.
Just do it, especially if you're them. They got the money. They got the time.
It's a ton of work for the crew, right? Like, yeah. I shouldn't like disregard that. I mean, it is like a lot of work to swap out a chassis and stuff. But if it brings performance, then
no one said Formula One was going to be easy. Like, no. Sorry. Oh, is it a lot of work? Well, I'm sorry, but you're in Formula One. Like, that's sort of what it is. It's a lot of work. Well, listen, Tim, really excited for the race this weekend. Excited to be talking post-race content with you in a few days here. So enjoy it. And are you going to be staying up or are you going to watch it in the morning?
I'll be staying up, man. I'm on the Japan time starting today.
Let's go. All right.
Yeah, it's you know how you get the bags under the eyes and coffee.
It's a good look.
Helpful.
It's a good look.
Yeah. I just want to congratulate you, Adam, on a job well done with the live stream that you did with the Nashville Predators.
Oh, God.
And Bruins.
Couldn't have been. They say F1's boring. That couldn't have been a more boring game. It couldn't have been worse.
I tuned into some of it, and man, I was like, I don't know how, like, you're pulling this off. It was like 2.5 hours of just you straight talking down the barrel, and that was it. I was impressed, thoroughly impressed.
Well, thank you, Tim. There's going to be more of that coming up throughout the playoffs. We haven't announced which team yet, but you probably can guess. There's going to be some late nights. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, well, if you're a big hockey fan, go over to STPN's YouTube channel, click on the live section, and you'll find Adam's first ever NHL game live stream that he did. Very impressive, with a game that was absolutely crap. And yeah, just Adam talking for like 2.5 hours. It was entertaining, man. It was really good. Super impressed.
Tim, we're gonna do an F1 stream one of these days. I'm telling
you. That'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd do it for sure. That'd be fun.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Let's have a great race this weekend.
100%.